Come listen to our radio show.
Mixtape Radio, every Wednesday night at midnight.
Until 3 a.m. Thursday morning.
Featuring the newest and the best in indie, alternative, and experimental music.
With your hosts, Jeff
and Christine.
So tune in. It's really gonna go.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It is 6:01 p.m. That means it's time for Off the Wall. Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, joined by Emmanuel.
Emmanuel joined by Kyle. And yeah, what a week! What an awful week. Or actually, it hasn't even been a week. The attacks came on Friday in Paris, and it's Tuesday now, so it's really only been about 4 days.
Yeah, I think you're right. Your math is right. Yeah.
I'll tell you, though, you know, I'm learning a lot about people, about attitudes, about ignorance, fear, courage, all that. I can't say I'm surprised. This happens every time we go through something like this. For those of you in a coma, for those of you who are listening in the future that have no idea what we're talking about the massive terrorist attack that took place in the streets of Paris on Friday evening, where last count, I believe, 129 people were killed. In, what was it, six different attacks? Six, seven? I'm not really sure.
Six or seven, yeah, locations.
In cafes, outside the stadium, in a theater. Awful, awful stuff. And there's really no words you can use to describe something like this, even though CNN will try forever. There's just, you know, we were watching, as always, we watch Euronews, and I think their coverage... It might have seemed unorganized and kind of crazy, but that's what the situation was, and I think it reflected it. They weren't trying to fill every minute, every moment with some kind of description or words. Sometimes you just heard somebody not saying anything or typing on a keyboard, or you just maybe saw something that you didn't understand. That's because we were all trying to come to grips with what was going on. And sometimes you need to see that unfold to get the real story. And I'm glad we saw that. Very little in the way of judgment and fear-mongering, just kind of shock, sadness, the feelings that you would actually feel being there. And already it's begun, though. Already it's begun here, especially in this country. You know, this country, of all the countries, I think, has the least right to be passing judgment and saying all the ignorant things that I'm seeing. Right now I'm looking at a map of all the governors in this country of ours that oppose Syrian refugees, as if that is the issue at all. You know, first of all, okay, this whole region destabilization is because of this country, because of George W. Bush, because of the things that we did.
Yes.
We as a country, not we as in the people here at WUSB or Stony Brook or anything like that. But you have, unfortunately, they do represent us. And that putting it very nicely, misadventure is very, very costly. I remember, probably those of you who are obsessed can track down a show that I said this back in our early days. This show came on the air in 2003, right after the invasion, the second Gulf War. Remember, there was the first one, 1990, or 91, actually.
I believe it was March 27th or February 27th, 25th.
Are you one of the obsessed that, you know, the exact date the show went on the air?
Well, you know, I was listening, and I remember the chronology because it was a pretty pivotal point in my life. I was going through a lot of changes, and I know where I was, so to speak, as is everybody in a lot of ways. So it is vivid in that sense, and I was paying attention to the actual dates, and I believe it was 25th or 27th of, I believe, February or March.
You know, what's funny is that this show premiered the same week that Real Time with Bill Maher also premiered. The same week.
Wow, that's
and
cool.
I, you know, I watched that program, and lots of times we covered the same ground. And, of course, there's a lot of controversy involving him, which I think we should get into at some point. Maybe today, maybe some other time. I just think it's kind of interesting that we've been around that long, 12 years now. But back then, at some point, I know I said, and maybe I even said it in a different radio program before this one, that the pigeons will come home to roost at some point. People who whose lives have been destroyed by our actions overseas are going to grow up, and they're going to be angry. And I even said, you know, if I was one of those people, I would be seeking revenge probably for the rest of my life.
And teaching it.
Absolutely. Now, the terrorists, this past incident on Friday, Did you look at their ages? Incredibly young.
26, 25,
younger than that. 19,
oh,
20.
Really?
Yeah, it was wow. It was really something. So do the math. You know, 12 years, these guys, they were 7 years old. 7 years old. So, you know, I'm not, these aren't necessarily people who are in Iraq or connected directly to what was going on with the U.S. invasion, but certainly indirectly, and certainly enough to see that the West is a threat, is evil. Whether or not that is actually true, that is the perception that people grow up with. And when these people do grow up, they're still angry. They have power to do things. They've learned a lot, and they have a very focused upon enemy. And that is what we are seeing. It's all related. It's all related to that one misstep that we all allowed to happen. And we all did allow it to happen. Anti-war protests weren't nearly big enough. The opposition in Congress was pitiful. We're all guilty of this. And now it's the flip side. And what we're seeing now is judgment from people in this country as if our hands are completely clean. You know, that where are these people coming from? Why do they hate us so much? You just have to look not even into history, just, you know, a few years ago to see how this all was set into motion and all the things we could have done in a much more intelligent way where none of this would have been happening or very little of it anyway. This level of hatred, there's a reason. There's a reason for something like this.
Yeah, I dare say that we don't understand. We don't really understand because we weren't on the other end of those choices, those decisions, that stuff raining down on young people. It's hard to fathom. And I think with these tragedies and so on, it's a reminder of what war is like, really at people's doorstep. And
you know,
the characterizations now are, as you said, flying around, misstatements and exaggerations and so on.
That's a very, very good point, because I've heard that since the days of Reagan, I've heard we're at war in one place or another, whether it's Grenada or
drugs
or drugs or all these different places that we have invaded in one way or another, or just been very involved in.
Right.
But we always use the phrase we're at war, but we don't know what war is. That is a very good point. We don't know what war is. War is two-way, you know? It's not just bombing people in one place and not having anything happen to you. It goes both ways, all right? So, yeah, if you're at war, expect your cities to blow up as well, because that's what war is. Don't use the term loosely. It's a very serious thing. And you know, we saw car bombs going off in Iraq and Baghdad constantly. You know, suicide bombers all the time. This wasn't happening under Saddam Hussein. Not a nice guy, but it wasn't happening under him. You can't deny that. We came into the picture. All of a sudden, it's a daily occurrence. And you know what? That's just the cost of war, the cost of freedom. It's unfortunate, but it's life. But, you know, you can't really say that when it comes to Paris. You can't really say, nah, it's unfortunate, but it's life. You say that, people realize what a stupid thing that is to say. They realize the cost of these things we've done.
Right. Yeah, and it's weighted. Like, we have veterans, of course, and who could tell us all kinds of things. But but the way we kind of dehumanize the people and talk about their techniques and tactics as terror and stuff like that. Well, it's terrifying to be occupied and regime changes and such in history. So that's the kind of interesting thing I think that plays into a lot of the propaganda, a lot of the that fuels the characterizations from this side of the water, so to speak. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we're seeing all these governors saying that they don't want Syrian refugees in their state. What a bunch of ignorami. Is that the right way to say Ignoramus in plural when there's so many of them.
Yes.
I'm looking at a map right now. Of course, it looks like all of the South is part of this. From Arizona to Florida, there's no state. It's such a nice straight line. it doesn't include California, at least not yet. But I'm also seeing Kansas. I'm seeing Illinois, really? And Maine, New Hampshire. New Hampshire is the only Democratic governor who says that she does not want Syrian refugees in her state. I called her an agent of ISIS on Twitter yesterday. I did. And the reason I did that.
You did.
I don't care. The reason I did that was because this is exactly what ISIS wants. And first of all, okay, before we go any further. Can we make a new rule here, please?
New rule.
So many damn names for this group of people. They call themselves Islamic State. Overseas, they're known as ISIL. And Barack Obama is like the only U.S. politician that calls them ISIL. Everyone else calls them ISIS. But their real name is what?
Daesh. Yes.
I say we call them that from now on. The reason being, Islamic State... They're not a state, and they're certainly not Islamic. They don't represent either one. And
good point.
You ask people who are Islamic, you admire these guys, you follow these people.
Yeah.
And, you might find a couple that say yes, you might. But, of the billion Muslims in the world, I'll bet 99% will say vehemently, no, this is not who we are. More than 99%. Good God. So let's not feed into that. Yeah, Daesh probably means the same thing in Arabic.
I was just thinking that. But
at least we won't be saying it out loud and thinking, this is an
Islamic
state.
Romanizing, yes.
You know, look at the reaction around you, the hatred that, the previous program just outlined a lot of the hatred against Muslims. And one thing I noticed, certainly by watching a variety of news feeds, was the immediate and strong condemnation of this act by many Muslims around the world, leaders, civilians, all kinds of people. So those of you who say that, why don't they do more? They're doing a lot. They're saying a lot. They're not militarily strong like we are, so they can't just snap their fingers and solve the problem. But they're plenty pissed, and they're speaking out. You might choose not to hear them. That might be the problem, the fact that it's not being reported enough. But believe me, there is outrage across the board. For God's sake, Hezbollah is fighting Daesh. Yeah, they are the people that we consider to be terrorists. They were elected in Lebanon, and I believe the Palestinian state or part of it. I'm not really entirely sure, but... These are our enemies. Iran supports them, but they are the enemies of Daesh. I'll say it for this show, Islamic State, ISIS, so that people get used to it. So you have people like that, but we won't ever acknowledge that. We won't ever say, we think you're horrible people, but we're going to work with you on this to defeat these people because, no, we can't ever do that. We have Russia that wants to defeat them. We have the entire EU. We have the entire Arabic world. And everybody hates these people. Everybody does. They have united, or they could unite in a way that has never been done before. It's actually an opportunity. Just like 9/11 was an opportunity to unite the world against this kind of horror. And I think we're missing a lot of these opportunities by not talking to people that we have differences with, not working together to defeat something that I don't think anybody really wants, except for a few crazed fundamentalists. And that's the real problem, is fundamentalism. In any religion, fundamentalism has, throughout history, been the cause of all kinds of problems.
Yeah. Yeah, makes for a divisive community, makes people take sides and not listen, and that's what we're missing. We gotta have understanding and create that when we don't actively.
Yeah, absolutely.
Time and time and over again until we get it right. That's kind of what democracy is about.
Yeah.
So
if you hear this crap, I hope people speak out against it. Your voice does matter. I have to say, Kyle, I'm very proud of your state. Your state is one of the few that actually is welcoming refugees, Washington State. In addition to Colorado and Pennsylvania, that kind of surprised me, Vermont, Connecticut. I'm not sure why New York isn't listed in that particular map, because Governor Cuomo said some really intelligent things today. We have to protect Americans and not lose our soul as America in the process, right? He said during an event at Harvard University. The day America says close the gates, build the wall, then I say take down the Statue of Liberty because you've gone to a different place. He notes the poem on the Statue of Liberty states, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, so I won't let them win by conceding defeat of the American dream." Now, 28 governors so far have demanded that the federal government not place Syrian refugees in their states. First of all, they have no say. You know, if you're granted asylum in this country, you can live wherever you damn well please. They can't stop it. I want to take truckloads of Syrian refugees to these states, except it would be really bad for the Syrian refugees. I'd feel, I mean, who wants to live in Alabama? It's ridiculous. But to say that the Syrian refugees are there, have you seen Syrian refugees? Have you ever actually watched what's going on? There's so many good documentaries out. But you know what? Let's take a shortcut. Go to Google. Type Syrian refugees, put it in quotes so you make sure you get the right thing, and click images. And those are the people that these 28 governors are afraid of. And you'll see that something like 2% of them are men of fighting age, if that's really what you're concerned about. Most of them are families. Most of them are scared families who have been living exactly what we saw in Paris on Friday. They've been living this in their lands for years now. They've seen death like you have not even been able to imagine. And these are the people that you want to keep out of your country. These are the people you're afraid of. It makes no sense at all. And I just cannot believe this is gaining traction, that we're seeing this being reported like it makes any sense whatsoever. And here's another thing. If you look at the identities of the terrorists on Friday, they're all either French or Belgian citizens, for God's sake. Maybe one came from Syria, but that's not even certain yet, because the passport that was found on him might be fake. So they don't even know that. But the vast majority of them came, they're homegrown terrorists.
It's actually taken, I think, 48 or 56 hours. It's taken a long time for the media to actually get that sort of down.
Uh-huh.
That this was about Western European nations with people who have lived there, who had a citizenship or had a residency for their entire life, maybe traveled a little bit. And the putting the pieces together, though, I mean, that has to be emphasized.
So consider this. One of those French people, one of those Belgian people, could have hopped on a plane and come over here because they weren't on any list that we know of, and they didn't come from Syria. They came from France. They came from Belgium. Safe places. But you know what? It's not so safe, because hatred can grow any place. It's not just restricted to a particular country or a particular type of person. And the way to really make hatred grow is to treat people the way that we are treating people, the way we want to continue treating people. I mean, basically, you take immigrants and you lock them away into a ghetto or just a place where they don't have the same kind of rights that the rest of the citizens have. What do you think is going to happen if you just let that exist for generations? You're going to have a lot of resentful people who want to change things.
Cohabitating, making their individual wishes sort of a broader plan for that community. Is that integration? Is that the type of community
No, it's not.
And it's also really important, I think, to have that gesture of goodwill. Because we must consider how we appear in the face of this, and to be welcoming to a degree to in spite of this, I think, as Germany has done, and this is the example that because look, this isn't just a show. These people will create lives when they become naturalized, so to speak, and that is a network of people. And if they're treated with respect and dignity,
yes,
and brought into this culture in the face of all of this, that there is a really high chance they'll get get word back. I mean, it is a network of families, as you said. How does that play? I mean, if they are doing well, if they are treated and they find community and given an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
instead of discriminated against,
right.
like before the doorstep, I think that goes a long way, because that's a lot of people who have family, who have connections to those places. That's the kind of goodwill we need to do. Not installing governments or security forces. Protection is, that's a whole other issue.
Well, now, I was thinking about this when the refugees were being brought into Germany, when they were coming to Germany a few weeks ago, and just the reaction of the people there when they were welcoming them, saying, "You're safe now," giving them food, giving them shelter. These things resonate. These things are remembered for a long, long time. And I was asking myself, what kinds of citizens will these people become? Probably very, very good citizens, because they're being treated like human beings. They're being treated with respect. They're being welcomed. Now, French society, a lot of great things about French society, but it has not been that welcoming to certain communities. And there's a lot of discrimination. And especially amongst the Arab youth, and look at the unemployment figures there. You don't have to really look too far to realize this tremendous disparity. And that leads to all kinds of homegrown resentment and anger and desire to change things. No excuse for the kinds of horrors we saw. But if you want to build a healthy society, you need to integrate the people that are part of that society and welcome them and make them want to contribute, want to build things, want to become a part of it, feel like a part of it, feel like something that is them, that is their voice. If you have a large community of people that feel that the system does not represent them and that that system needs to be replaced, you're kind of building the future, and a not very good future for yourselves. And that's what I've been seeing.
Yeah, it begets sort of a prophecy of evil. Mm-hmm. It's fulfilling exactly the kinds of characterizations, aspersions, negative impulse, and general attitude towards the U.S. It plays right into that hand.
Yeah,
and not who we need to be, and that is not who we are.
No, the Islamic communities within these countries should be very much a part of those countries, because they're a vital part, I think, of any culture. And in fact, in Belgium, I believe one of the parents of one of these guys actually went to the authorities saying, "Our son's been radicalized. We need help." And they didn't get the help they needed. It was missed.
Interesting.
But that is what happens when you have a community that feels they can communicate, that feels safe. They will say, "Yeah, there's a problem here." And good luck trying to find those problems without having connections like that. It's very important to basically include people as part of your society, not just allow them to live in a refugee camp or something like that, but basically have them be a vital part of your society. That's what our country was founded upon. I don't know at what point it changed where we said, okay, we're full, no more, we don't need any more people of this particular type. That is what's making things so divisive and unhealthy, and that's why you're seeing a lot of resentment. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can easily defeat hatred and fundamentalism if we have people from all walks of life who support our basic structure. And we're missing some golden opportunities here. So, yeah, Governor Cuomo said some really cool things today. I hope to see our state be listed along with your state, Kyle, as welcoming refugees. And, even it's pitiful. The amount of refugees that Obama was talking about bringing in pales in comparison to Germany.
The beginning numbers they were working with, yeah.
And that's not even taking into account the size and population disparity between Germany and the United States. They had hundreds of thousands of refugees they were preparing for, and we were like, yeah, maybe 10,000 or something crazy like that. Considering our hands are kind of dirty from this whole mess, we shouldn't even be involved in the first place. We need to do a lot more.
The distribution numbers, I think, when they were talking about for in the EU, and when they were discussing, who should bear the burden and that kind of thing, they basically, I think, were saying like 80,000 or 100,000 refugees for each country, and that was a lot of the kind of numbers that was being that were being opposed by
right.
places like Hungary and so on and so forth. So anyway, I mean, for 10,000, that's kind of a weak number for us to even start talking about. And again, that's a huge influence as far as being welcoming and.
Programming note, by the way, we have a basketball game coming up at 6:45.
Yes, think we do.
Women basketball going to Hofstra. Is that right? Okay. Going to kick their ass. one of two games, actually, this year that will be on Tuesday night. So we're shortened tonight, but we'll be full length next week. So if you need to plug anything in, go right ahead. What else? Well, this is pretty much all the news that's been taking place today. It's or this week. We're seeing, and it's not over yet, obviously, because they're still trying to track down people responsible and look for other plots and things like that. And you're seeing
it's fragmenting a bit, yeah.
The usual overreaction and misstatements and other things like that.
Yeah, a lot of people trying to capitalize on it, but I think the consciousness out there, the really smart people. They kind of get it. They're seeing people that are seizing this as sort of an opportunity to push an agenda one way or another. Mm-hmm. I think the mass of people out there really do want, in a humanistic way, to find some real solutions to this stuff and bring some cohesion to the discussion amongst people of all kinds of communities. That's what we need. That's the kind of healing I think that it takes to get past this stuff.
It's not more complicated than that. It's basically just people getting together with other people. When this was going on in Paris, I saw so many amazing demonstrations of this. People literally opening their windows to those who were trying to escape in the theater to escape into their apartments. There was a hashtag for people who needed to get home. You tweet that hashtag and
Puerto Verde,
something like that, and you
no,
can.
That, I'm sorry, that's in Mexico.
Well, okay, whatever it is. The thing is, it was a way that social media was being used.
Uver, I think. Is
and social
open.
Media, social media was used in many good ways, but it's also used in some sure. misleading ways as well.
Yeah, yeah.
There were reports of all people who had no relation whatsoever, old pictures being posted. You know, the usual misinformation. You have to vet these things. You have to make sure that what you're saying is factual. And there's a lot of panic that is brought out sometimes when things spread.
I think that was the strong feeling that we got when we were hearing that coverage, where a lot of even the announcers that were doing live coverage on Euronews, as you said,
mm-hmm.
just silence. You can't. You got to just kind of gather yourself, especially as journalists and stuff. You could sense that people were getting reports. There were, words being thrown around that you normally are like B horror movie phrases.
Right.
But it took a little bit of time. There was a bit of calm, a bit of quiet, where it was really just sit back and hear and feel out this reaction, this real kind of gasp around the world.
A collective breathing. Sort of, which we need to do. We need to stop. We need to breathe. We need to collect ourselves. We need to hold hands and realize that we're united because, this crap can't stand. It can't and it won't. We've seen it before. And the only way to defeat this kind of thing is individual courage and collective courage of normal people. If you start changing who you are, and start judging people based on their religion, their looks, their background, you're doing exactly what the terrorists want you to do. Believe me, Daesh wants people to hate Muslims. That's what they want. If you can treat Syrian refugees badly and turn them into resentful people who hate the West, they've won. Daesh has won. Daesh being Islamic State. That's what we're calling them from now on. That's their name. Let's not refer to them. They don't deserve either word, Islamic or state. They don't.
Indeed.
What's interesting, though, and I always kind of look at the way the media presents things. And from the beginning, they were saying, this is ISIS. or whatever they decide to call them.
IS, ISIS, ISIL.
Nobody said Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda is known for coordinated attacks and
demonstrations,
for simultaneous explosions in cities. Why was nobody even considering that this could be them? We're very well trained because we've been told now these guys are the enemy. The other guys, well, they might be the enemy, but they're irrelevant right now. Let's focus on them. Before any claims were made, before any evidence was examined, we were saying it's these guys, not those guys. And I just thought it was amazing how easily we did that, how easily we just changed the word of the enemy. And that's how the dialogue works. It's that fascinates me how they're able to do that.
It is. It's predictive programming. I think we're sort of we are aware. We get, and it's part of the 24-hour news cycle and internet, social media, that kind of stuff. Being the responsiveness, the frequency of that news cycle, it allows people to jump to conclusions, and then the correction aspect, right? Oh, I can go back and I'm going to go ahead and just fix my article. All right, looks good. Uh-huh. That's careless. Yeah. And that is, I mean, there are ethics, there's things that come in there as with this media. And anyway, so to that end, I think that it is something we should be sensitive to going forward when we're covering these things, because it is easy to jump to conclusions, and it's never been cool. It's not cool now either, especially with these kind of events going on. So, yeah, let's try to do some research, investigate. Let's report facts, but let's hear it out. Let's investigate. Let's figure things out.
Look at things with a critical eye,
right?
And examine how things are being reported.
Yes.
You should never stop questioning things, questioning what you're told, especially in situations like this where things are fast breaking, and not completely vetted. And just remember them. Remember how this particular thing unfolded. Remember what you were told. I remember
the framing.
9/11, so much misinformation was out there about things happening that never really happened. And it's educational to see how little things are checked out before they're reported as fact. And this continues for days afterwards, months afterwards sometimes. And the only way that we can actually challenge them is by paying attention and listening to them and basically sharing our common experience. So if you have things that you'd like to share with us, we can't take phone calls tonight. We'll try next week to do that. But write to us, please. We want to hear your comments.
Yes.
OTW@2600.com. OTW for off the wall at 2600.com. We'd love to hear your viewpoints, your observations, your theories, your suggestions. It's extremely important, especially at times like this. And, where is it all going at this point? Obviously, it's not over. Obviously, this is not going to be the end. All kinds of horrible scenarios are being theorized about right now, both in this country and overseas. But, to me, I'm kind of surprised it's not happening a lot more often. If it was as bad as everybody fears, it's not really that complicated to blow things up if that's what you want to do. And fortunately, that doesn't happen very often. So it tells me that the situation might be a bit more hopeful than the folks at CNN and Fox want us to believe. There's no reason to really panic and live our lives in fear. What the people in Paris are doing is they're going outside, they're gathering, they're standing up to this kind of thing, and that's what I think we all have to do.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah, please share, talk to your neighbors, and write us, let us know observations, things you're seeing, the way people, how people are handling it, what kind of reactions maybe in your community are apparent that are out there. We'd love to hear about it.
Yes, yes. And by all means, talk to other people as well. Communicate with them. Reach out to people everywhere. And don't buy into the ignorance and hatred, because that's the first thing that comes down the pike and swallows a lot of people up. You think that you can deal with a situation by blaming a particular group of people or by acting in a forceful way. It's not. It's usually someone else's agenda. So just keep that in mind. And I guess we'll be back next week with a regular length program here at Off the Wall. But WUSB will continue with all kinds of other content, including a basketball game coming up next, and all kinds of other programming afterwards. So I guess the only appropriate way to leave tonight is something something that's the sound of Paris, I guess. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely appropriate. Apologies to whomever is trying to reach us over the phones. As we said, we're not taking calls. So
why are we apologizing? We said we weren't taking calls. They should be apologizing to us for calling us when we said we're not taking calls.
I don't know. We're apologetic types right now. I don't know. It's going. Anyway.
Here's Edith.
Until next time.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, tous les jours, que ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré. Des nuits d'amour à plus finir, un grand bonheur qui prend sa place, des ennuis, des chagrins s'effacent, heureux, heureux, en mourir. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause.